Hello, and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 43. I'm Pam, and with me, as always, is Riley.
Hello.
Hey, Riley, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Mm-hmm. It's cold out. I never want to go outside again already. This episode, we have a guest, and it is Catherine from Flock of Nerds. Welcome.
Hello. Hi.
How you doing, Catherine?
I'm pretty good, thanks. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So we're talking today about video games as a social activity, so we'll get to that in the second half of the show. But first, Catherine, do you want to talk about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, I'm Catherine from Flock of Nerds. It's a YouTube channel and podcast. We do podcasts with my partner, Miles, and our friend, Chris. We have a podcast called Flock Talk. And then we also just have a YouTube channel where we put Let's Plays and sometimes convention coverage and stuff like that. Yeah, and it's just something we do as a hobby. It's mostly video game related.
Cool.
I love Flock Talk. It's one of my favorite podcasts. And I love that even though it's only monthly, you manage to like be succinct and keep it to an hour, which is
That's
more
impressive.
Challenging than you would think.
We don't do that well. We do it twice a month.
Yeah.
It's funny, though, because when we're guests on other podcasts and we see how organized everyone is, and I'm like really impressed because everyone has show notes and stuff, we call each other on the day that we decide to record and we're like, what are we talking about this? And I can't. Okay, yeah, I think I can talk about that. And then we just kind of go. So it's a little bit, we're not very organized, but we have a month to prepare and that's, we actually don't do a very good job at that. But
well, it turns out it's well. Fun, though. You'd never know.
Oh, thank you.
All right, so we'll just start out with what we've been up to in the last week or two. Catherine, what have you been playing or watching?
I just finished Valiant Hearts, yeah. The Great War. And I was like, oh, I've played this because of Pam, actually. I've been watching your video series of your top 100 games. And as soon as I saw like the footage from this, I was really blown away, and I had not heard of the game. So it was something that like as soon as I saw the gameplay footage that you showed, I'm like, I will like this game 100%. It's like a puzzle adventure, I guess, side scrolling. And yeah, it's so great. And it's also educational, which I kind of appreciate because I don't know that much about the war. So it's kind of like a nice way, like a nice, easy way to sort of learn a little bit about it. And
yeah, I totally agree, especially since it's about World War I. And I find like there's a lot more information out there about World War II. Mm. But
yeah,
so it's definitely nice to learn a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. And it was just like the puzzles are pretty unique and fun to figure out. And it's also really well written and like heartbreaking at times and stressful. Like when you play as the nurse and you have to like save people, it's super stressful. I was like really worried a bunch of times.
Yeah. I like how they sort of turned that into like a rhythm game. That was a really cool way of thinking of providing medical attention to somebody.
Yeah, and somehow it felt more urgent that way. Like, it wasn't, like, trying to figure out the right thing to do. It was just like, no, you have to figure out the beat. And and it kind of came out of the blue. Like, I wasn't expecting it the first time you had to do it, so.
Yeah.
So it was even more stressful. Like, how do I save this man? Oh, just have to hit X on the beat. Okay.
And the other stressful thing was since one of the characters you play as or with is a dog. So the whole time I was playing, when I first played, it was just like, this dog better not die.
Oh, no.
But even like, even all that information about the war dogs, like I didn't know any of that. How they were used in the war and stuff like that. So it was all very informative.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad you liked it.
Thank you for the recommendation.
No problem. Riley, what have you been playing or anything?
I'm pretty sure the only thing I've been playing that's new is Destiny 2, which is great. I got to max level and I've started like gearing up my character. I got my speeder, I got my sparrow, which is nice. So now I'm just kind of like working on gearing my character up so I can go do the more exciting things. in the game. Yeah, it like looks great on the computer. Like, it's so nice.
Yeah, I can only imagine how much better it looks than the console version.
On console. Yeah. Yeah, it looks really good.
So what kind of sort of end game, I guess, content is there? There's the raids, there's the Crucible, which is like a PvP. Is there other things? Are strikes different than raids, or is that the same thing?
Yeah, strikes are like the three-person content, I believe. Oh, okay. And then the raids, or the nightfalls, as they're called, are the six-person like raid content. And like that is technically like end game stuff.
Oh, okay.
And then they have an expansion coming out in a month, I think. So.
Oh, already?
Yeah. I mean, like, we say already, but like the game's been out on console for a little while
now. Oh, that's true.
And I think like they announced that they had plans for an expansion when the game was released. So like people knew it was coming. It does kind of feel like it's really soon, especially for PC players.
Right.
But it looks so cool. Like the cinematic that they played for it, the dude looks so cool. He's got like the coolest like gear on. He's got like feathers and stuff. And I was like, damn, I want to get that. I hope I can look that cool.
Awesome. And hopefully the speeder races come back. Oh, yeah. Sparrow races.
Yes. Come back. Give me the sparrow races.
All right. So I started playing Mario Odyssey. And this was actually the first time I have touched the Nintendo Switch. So, and I don't know. I guess I have some thoughts on the Switch first, which is that I have sort of confirmed that I'm not a handheld person. Like, I don't. At first, it was kind of cool. It's like, oh, I can watch Grey's Anatomy and play Mario at the same time. That's neat. But I just like, I don't like holding it in my hands, and I don't like the controls on it. Yeah. And Mario Odyssey, I don't love it. I think it's okay. I'm not too far. I just got past like the desert world, I guess. So that's basically the first full world. I like some of it. Like, I really like the parts where it turns into a 2D platformer, or when you take over the bullet guys and you sort of do stuff with them. But I'm not so much into the wandering the world, searching every hidden corner for moons.
I was just going to say, there are a lot of moons. Like, I didn't realize it. And then as I, because I've also been playing it, and I sort of feel the same way. It's just too many moons.
Yeah.
Like, and the like, it's, you just have to run a lot of places too. And I just find that, you know, some of them are really clever, but some are just like, oh, they're just, you got to bounce on the ground and there's a moon there kind of thing.
Yeah. So. Those ones, especially the one where you just like stomp the ground. It's like, oh, that's not the most clever way to find secrets, especially since there's so many places where you can do it.
Just like go around stomping and hoping that you get one.
Basically. And so the first level, which was just sort of like a mini level, I managed to get all the moons I needed fairly quickly. But then in the desert, I went around and I thought I did a pretty good look. But then I went back to the ship and was like, oh no, you're still 7 moons away from being able to leave. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I have a lot more exploring to do. Although there was apparently even more. I think I read that you need 150 moons to get to the end of the game. But there's actually a ridiculous number, like 800 or 1,000 total that will open up all the different content. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw someone tweet like a number that was the number you needed to get the good ending.
Oh, yeah.
Why is there a good ending? Like, why can't everyone just get the good ending for finishing the game?
Yeah.
But yeah, I went back. So when I had enough moons to leave the desert, I'm also not that much further. I think I went to one other world past that. But then I thought, well, I'm going to go back to the desert just to see what else there is to do there. And then you can pull up a list and it has like 60 or 70 moons in that one world. Yeah. You only need like 17 or something to get out of there. But if you go back, there's still like over 50 more moons. I'm like, really? Yeah. This is how to get the good ending, is to go back and find all these other moons. And I guess maybe you, I don't know if you learn more moves or something like that, and you can't get them all the first time around. I don't know, but it's just a lot of work.
Yeah, I assume it's like that because I know there's a lot of ice in the desert, and I have not learned anything that lets me go through the ice. So I assume that's something I'll learn. Did you do that?
I think like it kind of almost just follows the story. So think maybe once you get enough moons or something, then I did clear it, but I don't remember. Like I've just been playing it handheld as well, and I also like, I don't mind the Switch. I don't mind playing handheld games, but for some reason this game in handheld, it doesn't really work that well. Because you can turn off the, maybe I just haven't figured it out, but you can turn off the motion controls, but I feel like he can't do all of the moves. Like, it's enhanced if you use the motion controls. And like, there's one move that he does where if you shake the controller, his hat spins in a wider and wider circle so that he hits more enemy. Like, if you're surrounded by enemies, you could throw your cap and then you shake the controllers and it spins in a wider circle and hits all the enemies. But when I'm holding it in handheld, I still have to shake it to do it. It's kind of like there's no alternate way to do that move. So then I look like a freak, like I'm shaking my handheld and Miles is just looking at me like, what are you doing?
Plus it's hard to see what's on the screen if you're shaking the screen. So
yeah, it's all really awkward. So I think it's not the ideal way to play, but it's the only way I've been playing it so far.
I think even when you turn off the motion controls, it's specifically for the look, like the camera controls. I don't think there's any way of turning it off for, like, turning it off all the motion controls. So, yeah.
He kind of needs it to do a lot of the stuff that he does,
Yeah. And then my other problem with the game is that there's a lot of cutscenes, and I don't find Mario as a character or as like a story is all that interesting. Like, oh, Bowser stole the princess. How unexpected. So anytime the game sort of breaks away into like a cutscene, I'm just not particularly interested. And usually I'm someone who loves cutscenes. Like, I was always excited to finish every level in Wolfenstein 2 because I was like, yeah, cutscenes coming up, awesome. Whereas in this, I'm just like, okay, get on with it. Just let me go back to searching for moons.
Yeah, that's a little bit odd, the cutscenes that happen in between. Like, I'm used to them before bosses or like mini bosses, but and he doesn't talk, right? So like, there's not a lot of story you can tell that way. It's odd. I think I feel the same way. I think that maybe, but I know people love the game and I can understand why they would, because if you like that type of game, it's pretty fun.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a lot of work. I don't know if I want, I don't know.
Yeah.
I want to get the good ending, but I don't want to put in the work to get the good ending.
Yeah. I feel like that's one of the things where I would just watch it on YouTube. So what else have you been up to, Catherine?
Well, we finally got Amazon Prime, and then I realized, it will include all those TV shows that I've not been able to watch. So the one that I was really looking forward to, and I've watched the first two seasons for, was Mozart in the Jungle, which I don't know if you know that show.
I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah, I kind of had heard about it a few years ago because it was winning like Golden Globes and stuff. And I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting. It's supposed to be really good. It stars Gael García Bernal. I don't know if you know him.
The name is familiar.
Yeah, you probably would know him to see him. I can never, like, he's Mexican. He's a Mexican actor. And so he's in, like, I think he's in Amores Perros and Y Tu Mamá También,
think. Oh, okay.
He's like, friends with Diego Luna. They did movies together in, I'm throwing out these names, like, people know them. But he's a really good actor, and the show is about the New York Symphony, and Malcolm McDowell plays he was the conductor, and he steps down to make way for this young and up and coming prodigy, Gael García Bernal, Mexican, to kind of like spice up the symphony and make it more interesting. And then it's kind of like a story about all the musicians and all the relationships that kind of happen and how the symphony is run. It doesn't sound that interesting, but it's actually a pretty good show, and I've been enjoying it. The acting is really good in it. So. So I was pretty happy to get Amazon Prime so I could see that.
Yeah, it's always nice to start up a new service so you can be even more overwhelmed with
stuff. Yeah, there's so much there that, like, Miles saw and he was like, oh my God, Preacher and American Gods and a bunch of other stuff that we've put on our watch list. So there's a lot. It's kind of balances out Netflix for us. So
nice. Riley, what about you?
I binge watched The Good Place.
Yay.
Yay.
I watched it in like 2 or 3 days, I think.
We just did that too.
Yeah. It was good. I found myself like laughing way more than I thought. Like I wasn't expecting it to be like as funny as it was. And there's like one particular scene that I pointed out on Twitter, where Jason, I think, the guy that plays the monk, but who is impersonating the monk at the same time, when the boss guy, what's his name? The architect.
Ted Danson.
Yeah. when he's talking to him with the, like, the truth teller cube on the desk.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God, I could not stop laughing because he was just like answering and he would be right. And then he, like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but then the cube just went like, boom. I couldn't stop laughing. Oh my gosh, it was so funny. Yeah, I found like the comedic timing in that show was just excellent. So I really, really liked it. Although I'm not like, I don't know if I can get into like the because they can't swear bit where they say like forking and stuff like that, like in place of the swear words. I like that's one thing that I'm kind of like, oh my God, it's like, just come on.
Yeah.
But that's like the most minor like stickler point about the whole thing.
I really like started liking it more because a couple episodes ago I said I wasn't like super impressed with it. But as soon as no one can remember anyone's name.
Yeah.
The main girl.
Kristen Bell?
Yeah,
Kristen Bell. As soon as she sort of started to have some sort of character development and like turn into a bit of a better person, I started liking it a lot more. Yeah. And I particularly liked the episode where everyone decided that they're in love with Chidi. That was hilarious.
Yeah, that one was good.
Yeah.
And I was surprised to find out that this isn't new. Like, when it came on Netflix, I just assumed it was a Netflix original and the first season was all there was. But then I said how much I liked it. And someone's like, oh, season 2 is really good so far as well. I was like, what? So,
I had no idea.
Exactly. So another thing that I watched, I didn't binge it in a few days, but I think it was maybe over a week, was season 2 of Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. Has Catherine, have you watched that?
Yes, we did watch it as well.
Yes, we've all watched it.
Everyone watched it. Good. I didn't like it as much as the first season, at least. The first few episodes I found just, I don't like it when everyone is just fighting and yelling and they're being mean or they're making stupid decisions. And I found that was a lot of the first half of the season.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
And I didn't like how they introduced the new character Max just so basically everyone except Lucas could be an asshole to her.
They just like shit on her the whole show.
Yeah. I didn't like that. I didn't totally see a need for her jerk older brother.
Oh, I can't stand those scenes.
Exactly. Every time one of those scenes was on, I was like, ugh.
Like, he's over the top, right?
Yeah.
He's, yeah.
And there's no reason for it. I mean, later on you find out, like, his dad's a dick to him, but, like, still, like, that's basically all that's given to it. I mean,
like, he's only there so that Steve can have, like, that hero moment where he beats him up.
That's what it felt like.
Which, I don't know, I could do without that entire scene, so.
Although I did love Steve.
Yes.
Yeah, when he's the best.
When he became the babysitter, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
Yeah.
So there was good and bad things. Like, it probably took me until what is there? There was 8 episodes, I think. So I think episode 6 is when sort of stuff really starts to hit the fan, and that's where I became much more invested in it.
I found that episode 7, the one where it's kind of just about 11, and she goes to find the other girl. I was like, you could have just not watched that episode and you wouldn't have missed anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it would almost have been better to not know where 11 was during that time and then just have her come back as totally badass. Yeah. And just be like, what did she do? Right?
Yeah.
Like, what happened to her? I read an article, I think, about how that's like a really, like, people either love or hate that episode. And I've not met anyone who's loved that episode.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't know who the other people are, but... And I just, like, it was just so many people that they introduced just for that one thing. Like, I don't, will they maybe bring them back for season 3? But it just seems so unnecessary to have just, like, more of these people. Like,
with
abilities and things like that. It was just like, I know they exist, but.
I was so hoping that they would go to the town and help, like, in Hawkins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that never happened. So I was like, okay, well. All right.
Then it felt even more pointless to have it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, especially since those are the people that opened up the season. Like, when the season started, it was just like, who are these people? Yeah. I don't understand. And then you finally get that the one girl, you know, has powers too. But it never really, I don't know, they never really delivered on anything.
No.
In that. But, yeah, I still liked, I mean, there was... a lot of good things. I liked once it sort of got into the later episodes, with the exception of that one. Mm. I liked the kids. I still love, what's his name? Dustin?
Dustin. He's so cute.
I was yelling at the TV in the last episode. I was like, somebody dance with him, you jerks. I hate you girls. But yeah, it was good. And I always love Winona Ryder, and I liked her relationship with Hopper, and I liked Bob too. I didn't expect Samwise Gamgee to be in Stranger Things, but no. I was happy that he was.
Yeah. Miles was like, he was so mistrusting of him for the first.
Me too.
Like, he's like, I was like, something's that dude works like, for the he bad can't guys. Be this good. Yeah. No. No one's that nice. No one's that good. And he was just like, something's going to happen. And then I'm like, no, I'm pretty sure he's just an awesome guy. Took him a while, but he came around eventually.
And I also really loved how Paul Reiser was in it. And so it was very reminiscent of Aliens in a lot of ways in when were in the research place. There's sort of good and bad. I really also loved the first episode and all the arcade stuff, but the sort of the rest of the start was just like, okay, stop arguing and stop being jerks to each other and just, you know, get on with things.
I think the second half minus episode 7, like, it kind of had a really good forward momentum at that point. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, kind of escalating to the end. But, it took kind of too long to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought.
Yeah.
All right. Catherine, anything else you've been up to?
The only other thing is we finally saw Dunkirk in the theaters because neither of us were really, Miles and I should say, but neither of us were that interested in seeing it. We're not huge war movie fans, but everyone we know who's seen it loves it and was recommending it to us. And then it played at the Cinesphere at Ontario Place. They reopened that theater for the first time in I don't know how many years. And played it on their giant IMAX screen. So it was, I think it was just one weekend, was that movie and the live action Beauty and the Beast. But we just went to see Dunkirk on this giant screen and it was quite good, but very loud. And it has like, it was so loud. And especially, I don't know if it was especially because of that theater, maybe the sound system in there, but I have like crazy startle reflex. Like everything makes me jump. And so, like, it starts off with, like, crazy, like, right in battle and the guns blaring. And Miles just looked at me. He's like, are you going to be okay? Because every time, like, guns would go off, I would, like, jump out of my seat. But I eventually like acclimatized, got used to it, and it's actually quite a good movie. Again, learning history through like film and video games is pretty much the only way I learn history. So it was, a part of World War II that I did not know about, and it was very good. I highly recommend it. Although I think everyone's probably already seen it because it's been out for a while. So
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
Yeah, I'm not like huge into war movies, and I think like if it wasn't playing in the Cinesphere, I wouldn't have seen it. So
yeah, like I think I'll probably end up watching it on like Netflix or something whenever it gets there, or like iTunes.
You're gonna make your own Dunkirk. Yeah. it is good, and I like that it was just a different story that we heard. It's about the evacuation of British troops once they were kind of like surrounded in Dunkirk, and it was about how to get the troops back across, like they were in France, and trying to get them across the channel to back to Britain. And I guess it was kind of a big turning point in the war, from what I gather. I mean, if they take any kind of artistic license in a historical drama, then I just believe it all to be historical fact, because I don't know enough about stuff like that. So, but it was good. It was very good.
Cool.
Christopher Nolan, I guess, makes good movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Some of them. I mean,
some of them are pretty good.
Yeah. Riley, what else have you been up to?
I read The Long Way to a Small Angry Planet.
Yay!
I don't know what that is.
It was good. I read it in like 2 or 3 sittings. Like I whipped through it. Like, and sometimes I find like books lately are hard to read because there's so much stuff around to distract and do other things. But this one was really good at like holding my attention. One of the things I appreciated about it was it didn't go into unnecessary exposition of what the crew members were doing. I noticed that some of the characters would go off and do something, but then you didn't get that scene of what they were doing. It just kind of like went to the next step, and I appreciated that because it's like some of the things would have been pretty mundane and kind of boring, so... Yeah, I always appreciate when authors know and their editors know when to cut stuff. I don't know if stuff got cut, but or when to leave things out. But yeah, I really appreciated that. Like everything felt like it was very purposeful and everything had a place in the book.
Do you want to give a quick summary or premise for anyone who doesn't know what it's about?
So it's a book that takes place in space. And it follows, I'm so bad with names, is it Rachel?
Rose? And it's Rosemary.
Oh yeah, Rosemary, that's right. So follows Rosemary, who is a human woman that lived on Mars, because humanity at this point has like colonized Mars, and we have like ships that are all over space now thanks to some of the help from the other species that we've met. And she gets on this ship acting kind of as their administrative assistant. I think it's the best way to put it. Like, she's going to organize the captain's notes and finances and basically make sure that the ship is running well.
And she's also a translator. She knows a lot of different alien languages and customs and things.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I guess, part of the reason that the captain wanted to hire her in particular. And it kind of just follows them through, like, what they do. So the ship bores holes through space, and then they act as, like, jump points. You can kind of think of them maybe like mass relays, except they're like in the fabric of space, so you don't see them. You see like the gate that you go through, but you don't ever like, you don't see what it is that like transports you. It's wild. I was reading about the author explaining like how she had to do like a bunch of research with like NASA And like she talked to people that do like crazy like physics theories and stuff like that to get the science right. Yeah, it's really neat. And so basically they have the ship that punches holes in space to like connect two points that are far away to make a shorter distance. I think they used like the napkin theory to explain it, where like if you fold a napkin, you put like a dot on one side of the napkin and a dot on the other side of the napkin, you fold it in half and you connect those dots. The dots that connect are like the hole you're going through, and you're going around the folded part of the napkin, even though it's still there, you're just like going straight through. So yeah, it follows their ship through like all of the jobs that they do, and then like you get to see the crew members all kind of have some like secret type thingy, or like if you were to compare it to like Mass Effect, they have like their personal quests, which is what it made me think of the most, because I was like, okay, now we're following this crew member on their personal thing, and now we're learning about this crew member's personal thing. And it kind of shows like how all these different people ended up on the same ship and how they get along or don't get along in some cases. Yeah, it was just so good. And I definitely had shed some tears, but like not like sad tears, but like, oh my God, it's so good. Like these people are so happy and I love them. Like those kinds of tears, which don't happen very often. Yeah, I thought it was an excellent book, and thank you for recommending it to me, Pam.
Oh, you're welcome. I thought you'd like it.
Super up my alley.
Yeah. I am about a quarter of the way through the second book in the series, and it's neat because it's not a direct sequel. Mm-hmm. It takes the ship AI from the first one and sort of something happens with her at the end of the book, so it follows her in the second book, as well as a secondary character who was a fairly minor character in the first book. Like they weren't one of the crew members, so it's pretty good so far, and I like that it's sort of a side story rather than a sequel.
Yeah,
and it's called A Closed and Common Orbit. Other than that, I started watching American Vandal.
Which is...
We turned that on the other day, too.
Yeah, it's a parody. It's like a parody of all of the true crime series. So okay. I guess, what's the big one from last year?
Making a Murderer?
Making a Murderer. It sort of takes that kind of thing, except the crime is that at a high school... all the teachers in the parking lot had penises drawn on their cars. So it follows the guy who is considered the main suspect and the guy who is like looking at expulsion for having done this, and sort of talks to witnesses and talks to people and tries to find, you know, holes in the story. So it's like investigative journalism, but it's kind of weird because I think it's funny, like it's a good parody, but at the same time, it's a full series. I'm not sure if it's like 8 or 10 episodes, but I feel like parody's better when it's shorter. Like I feel like having a whole parody series is kind of a lot. How do you like it so far, Catherine? I think I've only seen 3 episodes so far.
Oh, I don't even think we got through the first episode, but not because we didn't like it, just because something came up or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think when Miles first wanted to watch it, when he first heard about it, he thought it was real. He's like, did you hear about this kid who like drew penises all over people? Like, no, I didn't hear about that. And then when he's watching, he's like, man, I thought it was real, but it's like quite clearly like mockumentary style.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny, right? I think we're not far enough really yet to judge it, but I felt like I'm curious enough to see what angle it takes, like how far it goes with this. But yeah, like you said, at a certain point, I kind of just feel like I'll be done with it. Like, just tell us who actually did it. And it doesn't need to be so drawn out, but... I haven't watched enough to know like if I'm gonna have issues with the pacing or not, but yeah, so far like it's well made, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so it does, and it does a good job of feeling like it's like a serious project, but I don't know. I think we'll probably, I imagine we'll watch the whole season though, just because now I want to know.
Yeah.
I want to know how it ends, yeah. But.
I feel like that too. So yeah, it's very well made. It gets very silly at times. Like at first I wasn't quite sure that it was a parody either, but one of the sort of defenses that they come up with for the guy who's accused of doing this is that while he always used to draw penises on the whiteboards at school, the balls always had hair on them in his drawings, but they didn't on the cars, on the teacher's cars. So like, well, he couldn't have done it because this is a different penis drawing. So it gets very, very silly at times. But yeah, I'm looking forward to finding out exactly how it goes down.
Because it feels like whoever did it to get that guy in trouble almost, right? Because but I don't know if that's, I won't know until I watch. But it kind of feels that way because he seemed like, from what I've seen, and it's not much, but they don't really show anyone else that might have motivation to do it or might be prone to doing that sort of thing, except for this one kid. So,
all right. So that's everything for what we've been up to in the last little while, which brings us to our main topic, which is video games as a social activity. And the thing that served as the impetus for this topic was that this past weekend, we all came together and we watched the Overwatch World Cup and played a new sort of couch co-op game that just came out recently. So I just wanted to talk about sort of just the way that video games bring us together. I think at this point, everyone probably knows that Riley and I met through World of Warcraft. Uh-huh. So that's a way that video games do that. Catherine and I met through the Cartridge Club, which is a video game club of people. So does anyone have any thoughts or any other stories of sort of video games as a social activity, whether it's something that has introduced you to new people or a way that you hang out with friends now?
Video games are also how I met my boyfriend. And we've been together for a long time now. And now I've found that games are an easy way to talk to somebody about, like, what you do in your spare time, at least for me. Because even just today I had somebody ask me what I do in my spare time. And I was like, well, I play video games. But then she was like, oh, okay, like, what kinds of video games? And so then I went into, like, well, I'm playing Destiny right now. It's like first person shooter. And then I play Overwatch, which is also first person shooter. So, like, you know, got into talking about games, and then we had like a common point to start off talking and getting to know each other, which was good. And I find that especially lately, that esports in particular is becoming a little more mainstream. I noticed that a lot with when they put the Heroes of the Storm stuff on, what was it, ESPN 1 year for BlizzCon. And so people are aware of what esports is, and like, I can't wait for more Overwatch matches to happen where we like get together and watch them on the couch, because that was so much fun.
Yeah, that was super fun.
Yeah, like I can't wait for that. And I hope, like, you know, that becomes something that, you know, people will go out to bars for. Like, I think that'd be wild.
Yeah. I feel like the esports bars in Toronto, they don't last long.
No, they don't. That's true. Yeah, they seem to pop up and then they're gone.
There was one right in our neighborhood, and I was like, oh, I really should go there, because they had a bunch of TVs and all they showed were esports on the TVs. I'm like, oh, I need to go there. And then it closed, and I was like, ah, oh, it's kind of my fault, maybe. Because I didn't go. Never ended up going. It was always like, oh, someday I should go check that place out. But yeah, watching the Overwatch World Cup with Pam and you and Riley, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, because it was also great because Canada and South Korea were in the finals. And I was really stressed out that that wasn't going to happen, but that made it just a little bit extra fun because we all had someone to cheer for.
Yeah.
Or in some cases, two teams to cheer for.
Exactly. You win either way.
Yeah.
I had never really watched esports before, but I watched the Canada match. I guess it was the quarterfinals. And I was like, oh, this is actually really cool. I like this. My intention was when BlizzCon and the World Cup rolled around to ask you all if you wanted to go to an esports bar and watch these matches with me. Little did I know that the matches would start at noon or that they would go for like 12 hours. So it was probably better that we did it in my place rather than
that. An expensive day out. Yeah.
Exactly. Catherine, you're sort of more of an esports fan, I think. Definitely.
Maybe. I mean, I'm a video game spectator. I really do, because like watching people play video games probably almost as much as I like playing them. Because like there's so many like single player games that Miles plays, and I have just as much fun watching him play them. Like he just started playing Horizon Zero Dawn. I'm like, this game is great, and it feels like I'm playing, just watching him play. But I watched the World Cup last year, the Overwatch World Cup, and the coverage was really bad. Because it was such a new game at that point that there wasn't a lot they could do. It was very confusing to watch. And it was like the perspectives were always just like from a particular player's perspective or something. Right. So it was just not very compelling. But they've done a lot to kind of improve, like even from the qualifiers to the finals at BlizzCon, they even made more improvements for the spectator part of it. So I actually, and I just really like watching Overwatch. Like I often will have just, there was like a Korean streamer I used to watch. He used to stream on YouTube, but now I think he streams on Twitch. So I usually don't watch Twitch as much, but his name is Big Head and he's really, really good. And so I would just always have that playing in the background. So I just like having video games playing. I watched a little bit of League of Legends too. I've never played that game. I don't fully understand it, but it's really fun to watch. Like if they have really good commentary and stuff like that, then I understand a little bit more of the game and I can kind of follow along. And you understand that, especially for League of Legends, the stuff that they're showing at the finals and things like that, they're really high level players, like really skilled. And you can kind of tell when you watch. And even with Overwatch, like when something big, or you know, like if someone does like when Mangekyou like kills a bunch of people with as Pharah, or if you watch Flower do anything, you understand like how skilled they are, and it's even that much more exciting to watch. So like, man, Flowers Widowmaker, that was
so good.
I actually this morning I just watched this morning I just watched just the highlights of all of the finals, and man, that flower stuff, I can't get over him as Widowmaker. But yeah, so it's just, I do watch a lot, but I'm, you know, I find it all very entertaining. So
yeah, I've never been one for really spectating video games. Like, I'm okay if, you know, someone is sitting beside me on a couch and watching them play, but I've never been really into the streaming or anything. And so this Overwatch stuff is kind of the first time for me. And I think it's partially just because they're at such a high level of play. So I feel like a lot of times with video game spectating, I feel like, oh, well, I could just be doing this, whereas, you know, with the Overwatch World Cup, it's like no, I couldn't do that.
it's more interesting if you play the game. Like, I think I would probably be more impressed with League of Legends if I actually played it and understood what they were doing. But with Overwatch, because we play it, like, we know the characters pretty well and how they play, and they do things that you wouldn't think to do with them. Like every time someone used their Riptire, like, and they would go outside and, like, you know, the tire would go around a wall and around a corner. I'm like, wow, I'm lucky if I can even find a person with my rim tire, right? Like, and they're just like, you know, their tires just going all over the place.
Jake was on Junkrat and he like single alted the Mercy that was like way in the back because his tire went through. Yeah, exactly. How did he know where he was?
I know. It was all very... Yeah. So I feel like we learned a little bit too. Yeah. Like, should play some more Overwatch and try Junkrat.
I
don't think Gavin is not going to play a Junkrat.
I definitely sort of try and pick up tips from that. The one thing I wish is that, though I definitely think the coverage, especially when we watched, was very good. Like, I liked how they had the replays, mm-hmm. and I liked when it went to, like, an overhead map, and you just saw the little icons running around. Yeah. The one complaint I had was that it felt like, I don't know, three quarters of the time you were spectating a Genji or a Tracer. And I just find Genji so difficult to know what's going on. Like, I don't play him because when I pop my ult on Genji, I'm like, I don't know what's happening. So I find it very hard to follow the action. And I kind of wish that they had done some other characters. Like, I think Widow is a really good one to spectate, and Pharah. I would have loved to see some Mercy spectating. Yes, anything too. With sort of,
especially because she's new, right? Like, she has so many new abilities. It would have been useful to see how the pros do it.
Exactly. And also, it's just smoother. Like, I can see what's happening if I watch a character like that.
Tracer's really jarring to watch from her perspective, because the player knows which way she's going to jump, right? But when you're just watching, it's like, where did she end up? I don't understand. Yeah, maybe Bastion. He just sits there, so he's probably a good one to watch from.
That's true. I loved when they were on Junkertown and they just, like, built that fort around Bastion with the Orisa.
The pirate ship.
The Reinhardt. Yeah. That was so amazing.
Yeah, and it was like, it felt like there was just no way to stop it. Once they could actually get that set up, then they just give up the first point. It's like, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
There's no getting through it. It was fun to watch, though. I'd never seen that before. Mm-hmm. I've not played a lot of the Junkertown map, so I liked watching whenever they were on it, because it was like, I didn't know about all these, like, little rooms and things on the sides, and I haven't played a lot of the Junkertown.
I definitely felt the need to play, because I hadn't played Overwatch in a few weeks, and then after this, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go.
Yeah,
I'm going to go play.
I had the same reaction.
I always try to get Miles to do the competitive matches, because you get a little badge. Mm-hmm. I'm like, just play at least 10 matches. I don't like doing the competitive. I'm not very good at Overwatch. So I like playing. We often play just like the mystery heroes, because then I feel like you have an excuse if you lose.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, well, I don't ever play it. So it's not my fault.
I hope that there's more events coming up at some point.
Oh,
trying to think of other games I would want to watch.
Yeah.
I feel like Overwatch is it for now.
Like, you know what's really popular is, like, NFL. Like, watching, like, that's a big esport.
What?
And I think it is.
Wow.
And I'm baffled by it, but it's just because I don't play that game. But I think there's, like, I think, like, Americans are very good at that. And, like, it makes sense that they're really good at it. And so, like, I think there's a pretty big league in the U.S. for it. But we also watch Evo, which is, like, the fighting game sports. Like, I'm, like, huge into Tekken, so.
Yeah.
Like, I just really like watching Tekken. So we watch Evo, but that's about it.
Okay, so next. I'm going to kick this one off with a question from the Doc Web, and it's, do you still buy games that are primarily a social or group activity, like Mario Party or Battlefront? Do you have a preference for competitive versus co-op, and how about in-person versus online? So the reason I wanted to start off with this question is that the other reason we got together last weekend was to play a game called Hidden Agenda, which is a co-op game that just came out a couple weeks ago. It came out in October, I think. And though I don't think it went quite as anyone would have hoped, it was a game that I was super excited about when I first heard of it.
I think for these multiplayer games, we're both, Miles and I, pretty excited about the stuff that Playlink is doing for PlayStation. Mm. So, like, the using your mobile phone, involving more players that way, so you don't have to buy, like, six PlayStation 4 controllers.
So
we were pretty excited about Hidden Agenda because of that, and because we both really enjoyed Until Dawn, and it's the same company. So we were looking forward to it, and then it just didn't play out the way that we thought it would. Mm-hmm. And it was, we were a little disappointed, like, and it, you know, the company was great, like having, like, everyone was playing it really well and stuff, but it just didn't quite work. And I'm not sure, maybe it was the competitive aspect to it. There was just something off about it, and it was a little disappointing.
So I definitely do still buy games that are primarily social. I'm also excited about that. Honestly, the best that I've played so far is just the Jackbox games, because, you know, it's sort of easier things like trivia or, you know, sort of word puzzles, coming up with stuff. And what really helps that is that you can also play with people who aren't in the room with you. Like, actually, the day that you guys came over later that night, my friend Mel was doing the charity stream for Extra Life. I jumped onto their stream and they were playing the Jackbox game. So I, like, played from home along with them a few times. And it's cool that you're able to do that. But with Hidden Agenda, yeah, it was... I mean, there was a few problems with it. One was that it wasn't written very well. Like, I did end up going through and finishing the game on my own, and it just, they told you things, they didn't show you things. Like, the character, the main character you play is a cop, and you're told from a radio talk show that she's a dirty cop, but you never ever see any evidence of that, so, and then...
Yeah, that was weird. I forgot about that.
Yeah. And then there was the other one, the district attorney, who talked in 90% cliches, which was not good writing. And then, so there was two modes for the game. It was a co-op mode, which we didn't try, and a competitive mode. And in the competitive mode, one person will be given a secret hidden agenda. And so that just means you need to make a certain decision go in a particular way, but there didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason behind it. Like, you didn't know what your purpose was. It was just like, oh, try to make everyone do this. And so when I first thought of that, I was like, oh, so that means we're gonna, like, have a discussion and, like, say, oh, why we think we should go one way instead of another. But there's then also this thing called takeovers, and whoever basically uses their takeover last can just decide, make the decision 100% by yourself. So it wasn't even like, you know, you had to do any convincing of people. It was just like you had to be the fastest to press your button in order to get to the decision.
And I found too that I never got the hidden agenda, but it always felt like if you had a takeover and you had a hidden agenda, and if everyone else was leaning the other way, you would just take over the vote and vote that way. And then there's a part where everyone else has to guess who had the hidden agenda, right? Yeah. And then it becomes very obvious, right? But it's still, I think, better for the person with the hidden agenda to do that, even though it outs you as the person with the agenda. And then I thought it was really weird that, are there only hidden agendas in the competitive multiplayer mode? Because that's a weird thing to call the game if it's only in, like, one third of the game. Like,
I think so.
Yeah, because why else is it called hidden agenda? Because I don't, even if Miles and I play it, we don't want to play it competitively. We think it might work. Like, our theory is that it might be better as a co-op game, which is kind of how we played Until Dawn, where... I tried not to make decisions because he was playing, but at the same time, like, it's the type of game where you're like, I think we should go left instead of right. And, you know, it doesn't affect too much, but I don't think there should be something in it for me to say we should go left. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, that's how minor those decisions kind of were. Like, should she be mean or should she be nice? I'm like, does it matter that much in the end? I don't know.
Yeah.
It was kind of hard to tell what impact it was really having on the story. And
it's just complicated, because then there was also the points for, like, doing your hidden agenda or guessing who has a hidden agenda. So it almost conflicts with the main story. Like, if you want to go through the story and you want to find out who the killer is and you want to get the good ending, that's one thing. But then there's the other sort of sub game it tries to put in of playing for points that just doesn't really, it conflicts with that.
Yeah, it feels like it's trying to force you to, you know, not necessarily play the game the way you want to, right? Like, I feel like I'm always like lawful good in everything I do. Like, like I have a really hard time being the jerk or, you know, being the mean person or something like that. And so I would always pick the same way. But if I had an agenda that said, no, you should kill this person or not, right, I would have a hard time going with the agenda just to win, just to get points. I think I'm more lawful good than I am competitive. So maybe. I don't know.
So does anyone else have any like favorite sort of social games? And then Doc Webb was also asking like if we prefer competitive versus co-op, which I think we're getting a sense of, and online versus in person.
Lately, I have preferred online just because it's easier to play with my friends that live in America. Because there's no easy way for me to get together with those guys and play games with them. I didn't buy Destiny, but my boyfriend bought Destiny for me. And like the primary reason that I was so excited about it was that all the people on my Battle.net list would be potentially playing it. And they're people that I've played games with for a long time. So yeah, lately it's definitely been online. Although playing like Overcooked was really fun.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the most ridiculous game. And I still want to play it with like four people. Yeah, like, I mean, there's some games where I could, you know, see playing them in person. But for the most part, like, I like to be at home. Because I like my home.
Catherine, what about you? You and Miles play a fair amount of co-op games, don't you?
We do. And I think that I think Overcooked is one of my favorites. Mm. And at around the same time, we also played Lovers in a Dangerous Space Time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is, yeah, that one's pretty fun. Yeah, it's fun. I like it. But I think I have just as much fun playing online. So I don't play a lot of multiplayer online stuff. But when Overwatch came out, we had tons of friends who were playing it at the same time. And even though I'm terrible at the game, you know, when you're playing with your friends, they're not, you know, they don't yell at you.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, ah, just have fun, that kind of thing. So it's, I don't mind that. But I don't play a ton of online. So I kind of like, yeah, Miles and I play a lot of games together, and that's pretty fun. The party games that we like we also really like the Jackbox games, mm-hmm. but the free one that came out for PlayStation Plus members called That's You, that's a really fun one to play if you know the people that you're playing with pretty well, because it's kind of like voting, like who's the most likely, you know, to pet a wolf or if it's a dog, that kind of thing. Like you would need to know the people a little bit,
mm-hmm.
but Jackbox is kind of good, like even if you're playing with people you don't know. And we also got Knowledge is Power, but we haven't played it yet. So right now, even though we didn't like Hidden Agenda as much as we wanted, I'm still really interested in these Playlink games and games that where you control, you know, use your phone as a controller,
mm-hmm.
because it just allows, you know, lots of people to play. So there was a kind of an unofficial cartridge club big party or something at Nintendo Hodges where when he first got his Switch, and we played Jackbox games there, and it was a large group. It was like maybe, you know, 10 or 12 of us playing at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's kind of neat that you can have a game where everyone in the room can participate. And
yeah, and then you're not limited by the cost of the controllers either.
Yeah, imagine if you had to buy 12 Switch controllers.
I like in-person games. Like the only really multiplayer online game I play right now is Overwatch, and I tend to just play it by myself anyway. So I really like in-person games. Like I love the Mario Party games, although I honestly haven't played them for years,
yeah.
because they started using motion controls and I don't like motion controls.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like competitive games. Will and I try to play some competitive games, like retro games or even newer games, but I also have a problem playing competitive games where you have two characters on the screen at the same time, whether it's like a beat 'em up like Streets of Rage or like we tried to play Cuphead two player. I just like forget which character is me, and then I die. Yeah. So
I do that all the time.
Yeah. So as much as I want to play co-op games, I'm just abysmal. Like I'm so bad.
Yeah. I whenever we would play Fusion Frenzy, I would, at the beginning of every game, I'd have to yell out what color I am. Like, yeah. Like while playing, I'm like, I'm blue. I'm the blue person. I'm like, just, I had to like say it all the time because then I would just forget. I'm like, I don't even know which one I am. Like, so the only way I could play that one is just to keep yelling out my color, which drove everyone else nuts. But yeah, otherwise, it gets too frantic too with like so many players, but. Mm-hmm. Fusion Frenzy is another one of my favorite like multiplayer games. That's
I've heard of that.
It's an Xbox exclusive, actually. So yeah, it's super, super fun. And it's one of the ones that they announced for backwards compatibility.
Oh, okay.
So which is why Miles was he bought the Xbox One X, because now we can play Fusion Frenzy. And he wants to be able to get rid of like a bunch of consoles. So he's like, we'll get this. And now we can just keep all of the backwards compatible games. But Fusion Frenzy, I highly recommend it. It's probably one of the better multiplayer games. Like,
Nice.
It's really fun. And it has like a really, like a pretty big variety of games that you play in it.
Oh, cool.
Check it out.
All right. Okay, so another question here from the doc web is, have you ever participated in a LAN party?
No.
I have not.
No. I don't think I have either.
I remember people talking about it in, I think, my last year of high school, my first year of university. And I remember being like, I want to do that. But then, like, I had, like, a MacBook at the time. So I couldn't play video games with people.
Yeah, I have never done a LAN party myself. Will used to do LAN parties because he used to play competitive Counter-Strike, and he was telling me that when he was doing LAN parties, flat screen monitors weren't even a thing. So bring like a big box monitor and the tower and like the keyboard and mouse, and it sounds like a lot of effort.
It does sound like a lot.
So yeah, I think if I want to play games with people, I'd rather just play something that is meant for multiple people in a room rather than have to drag all my gear somewhere. One of the other things is WoW and MMOs, which are sort of big social activities. I think we've all played World of Warcraft at some point. Catherine, when you played, did you get into the social aspect of it a lot? Like, were you in guilds? And
No, not at all. So I always say, like, I'm not very good at games. And, like, I didn't understand. Like, I knew what World of Warcraft was. But, you know, I think Miles got the demo or whatever. And it took too long to load on our computer. So we had to go home. This is before we were living together. So when it loaded on my computer, I kind of opened it up. And I'm like, I don't even know how to move. Like, I had never played any, like, WASD games or anything like that. So I was like, I can't move. I don't know what to do. Like, so they just turned it off and couldn't play it. But when we started playing, it was just with a couple of like real life friends. Mm-hmm. And so I think Miles made a guild, but he just kind of like paid people like a gold to sign our, like to sign up for our guild. And then he kicked them out once we got in there. And then our guild was like maybe six people of people I actually knew in real life. So I never played like the full, like everyone I know who played WoW played the raids and, you know, had to coordinate getting together and stuff and all made really good friends through it. But we played really, really late into it. I think maybe it was after the Burning Crusade. So it had been out for a while by the time we even started. So
yeah, when I started playing WoW, I was never a multiplayer person at all. And the whole idea of it didn't really appeal to me. But I started playing with someone I was dating at the time. And there were this other couple that worked in the same place with us. And they're like, oh, you can, you know, roll on our server, join our guild. And then I just sort of like got sucked into it. Like all of a sudden, I was only level 56 or something. This was in vanilla, and all of a sudden I was like, they were bringing me into raids because I was a healer and they needed a healer, and then all of a sudden I was like an officer in the guild, and it just sort of snowballed from there into me always having like these majorly pressureful social ties that I could like never ever leave.
Oh, that sounds stressful. I don't know. That would
It was stressful. I mean, I don't want to make it all sound bad because obviously I've met like a lot of people both online and in person and made a lot of friends through WoW. But at the same time, it was just like there was a lot of times where I was like, you know, I don't really want to be playing this, but there's a raid tonight. Gotta get online.
Yep.
You can't let them down.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I worked with someone who like wanted, when she got into WoW, she, same thing. I think she was like her, the guild she was in was a little too serious for her. So she was like, I kind of just want one that's a little bit more casual. And when she joined that one, they had like the officer would have like a one-on-one session with her to like figure out what kind of gear and stuff she needed. Like it was a whole day. She's like, oh, I have to meet with my guild person to like figure out what my character needs to do before I'm allowed to raid with them. I'm like, oh, that sounds like a lot of work. Like I just go talk to the townsperson and they ask me to go pick them 10 apples and I'll go do that. I really did not play WoW the way most people did. I leveled up like all my cooking and all my fishing, like, which is, I don't think I played WoW the way I was supposed to. I just was always on my own. Like, oh, I have to do some more mining and make more money. Like I put a lot of money actually into our guild because I was, everyone else in the guild were like crafters and mm-hmm. I was the only one that was just like collecting stuff. Mm-hmm. I was a gatherer, I guess. So I'm the only one that actually ever made money and everyone else just spent my money. But it was fine. I was like, if I wanted someone to play and they couldn't afford a mount, I would buy it for them. It's like the sugar daddy of my guild, basically. Like, what do you need? You need a new outfit? Oh, you want a new weapon? I'll buy it for you.
I got you, sweetie.
Because I think when Cataclysm came out, like my mining was all like already like maxed out. And so I could mine the newest metal that came out at that time. Yeah. And so I remember like there was one day where I just flew around and like just mined for like an hour or something like that, but it was always like me and one other person and we were like racing to get to the ore first. and then it's like in the first like couple weeks it sells for so much money, so I just did that and then I bankrolled the guild for a little while.
Nice.
I felt very useful.
That's good. Yeah, every time a new expansion came out, those initial gathering mats cost so much on the auction house.
That was me charging a ton of money.
Riley, did you have anything to add about WoW or MMOs?
Just that when I was playing them, it was... Okay, so there's something about having like a dedicated raid team who raids like 3 nights a week. And you see the same people and like you get together and you talk to them and like eventually like you get to know these people. Like one of the guild members that Brian, my boyfriend, and I have been or had been raiding with for a long time. We started out in like one guild and like went to another one like all together. And there was like a group of 5 or 6 of us that kind of went like all together like anytime a guild would stop raiding or a new expansion came out and we were like, well, this group isn't able to do the content we want to do, so we would move on. So it would be like 6 of us kind of all together, and eventually, you know, you get to know these people. And I met one or two of them.
Merc.
Yeah. Merc. And I don't think you would know him, but he was a paladin, Eldrin, who used to live in like Waterloo. So back when I had time to do all of this gaming in like university, he was also went to the same university. So it was like I met somebody that was going to the same school that I was through WoW.
That's cool.
Yeah, and like you get to know these people. And then when we stopped raiding, we kind of didn't really talk to them. And like when we stopped playing, like the limited amount of contact that we had kind of died out because now I have no idea how to contact them outside of World of Warcraft.
Right.
But it's like there was just something about that social experience of, you know, meeting up 3 times a week with a bunch of people that, you know, all want to do the same thing that was really nice. And I don't really have that kind of thing anymore, but I feel like it was a product of the time in my life that I was in, and I don't think that that's something that I want to do anymore, but it was an enjoyable experience when I had it, for the most part. until the end when I was obviously hating everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got a question from Tatiana Wrights, which I think goes well in this section, and it's, have you played games where you've had to navigate the minefield of interpersonal dramas? Things like jealousy over who you play with or for how long, or broken friendships. What's the best way to navigate that while still enjoying the game?
Yeah. I have one specific,
very specific memory of being chided for playing with my boyfriend at the beginning of a new expansion when the two of us were the main tanks of the raid group. So we would run heroic dungeons together to get gear because we like to play with each other in the game. But there were people in the guild that were upset because now both main tanks in the guild are locked to instances and can't run anybody else through. Which I can kind of see where they're coming from. However, nobody asked either of us.
Yeah.
So we, you know, took that to mean, okay, you know, somebody has that set up, so we're going to go do our thing. And then later on we find out, oh, we should have asked people, apparently, if they wanted to run dungeons with us. So, like, that kind of thing. which, like, seems so silly and petty now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and just, like, you know, people would, like, form relationships online, and, you know, if something went sour between the two people, it would, you know, one of them would be like, oh, I can't believe you're still talking to that person because they were really rude to me or whatever, or, mm-hmm. you know, some other situation. So there was always that, and then, like, when you get 25 people together, there are definitely some personalities that do not mesh well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really tough, too. And I mean, the best way that I got through that was to insulate myself with a group of people that I, you know, felt like I could trust when I needed to vent about things. Because it's really good to have a channel that you can just, like, type how frustrated you are without opening your mic and accidentally calling everybody a bunch of idiots because they can't move out of fire. Or someone's wondering why the tank is dying, it's because the tank isn't using his fucking cooldowns. So, yeah, anyway.
Tell me how you really feel. Yeah, I've definitely had those things. I mean, because I don't know. There's a couple ways people look at it. And some people look at it and they're like, come on, it's just a game. It's just the internet or whatever. Without, like, realizing these are actual, you know, people playing the game or on the internet or, you know, what have you. I remember sort of the thing that sticks out most for me is that at the beginning of one of the expansions, when they started challenge mode dungeons.
Oh, no. I remember this. Sorry, go ahead.
A group, so it's five-person dungeons. Oh. So a couple of us wanted to, like, go for server first for getting golds in every dungeon. So we, like, sort of handpicked a group based on
skill.
not just skill, but also based on the class. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, we wanted a mage because a mage would be very good in this. And we wanted a death knight because a death knight would be very good in this. So, like, we picked that, and then other people felt, like, left out. Mm. So that definitely caused issues. Yeah. So I don't know. It's just like there've been a lot of instances like that because, like, you're limited to how many people can do the dungeon, and then you're, like, locked to the dungeon. Mm-hmm. And then even it happens in raids, although I think they've changed raids. So now you can have a variable amount of people in them. But just the whole thing causes problems. Like, if it's a 20-person raid, you need more than 20 people on your raid team.
Yes.
Because, you know, what if someone's not available? So then, but then the day that every single person shows up and you need to bench people when you're doing new content or about to get a new kill. And so it's just like,
you've got 10 sad people.
It's 10 sad people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's always things like that, that sort of cause interpersonal drama.
I never envied the officers, like the officers and the guild masters, like, I never, ever wanted to be in those positions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I always just found myself in those positions somehow. Like, I don't know what's wrong with me. The thing is, because I don't actually, a lot of time I don't actually like doing it, but it's just like, I see some thing I think could be better, and I'm just like, oh, well, I'll do it then. And it's like, why? Why did you say that? So I don't really have any advice for how to navigate this while still enjoying the game. Stop playing MMO.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems unavoidable.
Yeah, it's hard.
Unless you play it like me and you just don't play the multiplayer part. You're there with other people, but you're just not playing with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was more of an NPC game for me.
Yeah.
I just did quests. I just did quests and ran around the towns.
The NPCs fun. Didn't get mad at you.
Yeah. They were always very grateful.
Yeah.
I delivered love letters. It was great. I'm nice. Sorry.
I mean, I think the one thing is just to, like, communicate and say what you want. Because even, like, I don't know. Say now with Overwatch, like, I end up solo queuing competitive like 100% of the time, and I'm like, my friends never ask me to play, and then I'm like, and I don't ask my friends to play either. So.
I mean, like, also your play level, like your SR, I can't play with you.
No, we can play together.
Really?
Yeah.
I think we can do placements together, but
no, there's like 1,000 points. Oh, I'm not diamond now.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right, well, we should play together.
Now that I play more than Mercy, I'm not diamond.
I think you should probably also try to find people who have the same attitude towards the game. Like, because always, like, if you have like 50 people, there's going to be some people who take it a little bit too seriously.
Yeah.
Right. And can't remove themselves from the fact that it's also still a game and it's supposed to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's kind of hard to do, but. Like Riley was saying, you probably had like a little breakaway group, and it was probably because they all had the same attitude towards the game as you.
Right? Yeah.
Like, you have to find those people, right? The ones that are like, you know what? It's in the end, I just want to have fun. Like, if we all die but had fun doing it, mm-hmm. that's also, there's value in that, isn't there?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
for sure. And I feel like playing with friends also sort of softens the blow of losing, because you're probably having more fun during it. Yeah. So whereas, like, if you're playing alone and you're just dealing with a bunch of jerks on the internet and then you lose, it's like insult to injury.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, so we're close to wrapping up here. I just wanted to spend a minute talking about any gaming groups and clubs. I mean, right now we are all part of the Cartridge Club, which is started off as like a gaming book club sort of thing where they picked a game every month and everyone would play along and discuss it. And then there's a podcast end at the end of the month, and now is kind of grown into like content makers and a lot of just sort of friends. A lot of people came down to Toronto in the summer, which was fun. Are there any other sort of gaming groups anyone has been a part of or wants to talk about?
The Cartridge Club is really the only one that I really interact with.
Yeah.
But Miles also plays Magic, so he's in, like, most of his friends are, like, Magic friends, and so.
Right.
Magic friends.
Magic friends. He has magical friends. But me, no. Mostly just the Cartridge Club, but it is just a lot of really like-minded people, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find it's really good, whether it's sort of in a official club capacity or just like the people you meet on, you know, Twitter or wherever or in person. I just like talking about video games. Like, it's sort of, you know, my main hobby. So it's nice. I mean, this podcast is obviously a big part of that. But like, it's nice to, I mean, it's fun to play games, but it's even better to then like talk about your experience playing games with other people who are playing the same stuff as you.
Oh yeah, Miles has a ton of like Twitter chat, like Twitter groups of people that are playing the same game at the same time as him. So like when I think he was in a chat with like Musty about Wolfenstein 2, and when he was playing the Telltale games, like the Walking Dead games, like that was a conversation that he was having with Travis throughout it. Like, and they were like, and it was like a really excited conversation about, you know, what did you do in your game? And like, it just invites, you know, like, there's just more people to be able to talk to about this sort of thing instead of just like me telling Miles, because he's there when I play most of the games. I'm like, yeah, you already saw it, you know, it's not as exciting to tell you about it. But yeah, just having more people. And I found like Jake from Polykill, I think, has like, you know, he plays a lot of other games that I don't play, but he also really likes like the farming sims and stuff that I like. So it's nice to have someone like, hey, Jake, this game is coming out, you'll probably like it, because I'll probably like it. And just find more people who are interested in all those like niche games that maybe not, that aren't globally popular or something.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely a positive about sort of having social media and being able to talk to people with similar interests and get those kind of recommendations. So our last question comes from LifeSpiller79, who asks, with social media being a social activity, do you think it dictates your opinion about a video game subconsciously?
I might even say consciously.
Yeah.
Like, especially on Twitter, and like all of my interactions on Twitter are pretty much with people I know from the Cartridge Club. And if, you know, a bunch of them are playing one game and they all speak very highly of it, then I'm probably more likely to be interested in that game.
Yeah.
And then even as the social aspect, like maybe I'll want to play it sooner than I would have because everyone else is playing. I kind of want to get in on the conversation too. So yeah, like I know definitely. For sure, like Miles will jump on a game if other, oh, all these people are playing Wolfenstein 2, so I should play it now. Like, because you kind of want to be in it when everyone's experiencing it at the same time. So I actually think it's a conscious decision. Like I follow Twitter and see what people are saying on it to help me know whether or not I'd even like a game or should bother playing it. Stuff like that. So
I agree. I definitely get a lot of recommendations and stuff from Twitter. And then in terms of like how good a game is, that can even sort of affect things for better or for worse. Like sometimes something like Mario Odyssey, for example, where everyone is just raving
and everyone loves it.
And then I play and I'm like, what?
I know. I feel bad if I don't like a game that everyone loves.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, oh, well, but then maybe I'll try a little bit harder to find the parts that they do like. And then maybe it will help. Like, I don't know.
It's weird to like a game that a lot of people don't like either.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I really liked Mass Effect Andromeda. And I know that there are people on Twitter that were like, Mass Effect Andromeda was shitty. But, like, I really liked it. But I don't feel like I can talk about it, especially on Twitter, without somebody being like, what do you mean you liked it? Like, BioWare just, like, they screwed it up so bad, blah, blah, blah. Like, some bullshit with EA. Like, I don't care. I liked the game.
I mean, that's a dick move, though. Like, yeah. It's one thing if you play a game, you don't like it, and you just say, you know, generally on Twitter, oh, I didn't like this because this, this, and this. But, like, getting up in someone's mentions to be like, what do you mean it's a good game? It's not a good game.
Like, I've seen that happen to people that I follow on Twitter. So I'm like, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, it's really hard to have an unpopular opinion on social media. Yeah. Like, you're just inviting, you know, a war, basically. Like, you have, if you have an unpopular opinion, you have to be ready to just defend it or ignore what people say.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Because they take it as an opportunity to just get up in your face. So.
And then feel like you owe them an explanation.
Yeah, because you put it out there, so.
Yeah. Obviously, you want to discuss this with a stranger. Come on.
Yeah. To fling myself back on topic real quick. I have found that I think like you were saying, Catherine, when a new game comes out and then everyone is talking about it, you feel kind of like you're missing out if you're not playing it. So I was like that with Horizon Zero Dawn, which I have now, and I'm like super behind because I haven't even started it. But like I like muted a bunch of people on my timeline, like, and like have subsequently like unmuted them, but now I feel like I've missed out on the initial like, wow, this game is so cool, like blah blah blah, dinosaur mechanical dinosaurs or whatever. So I'm gonna be like coming in like 6 months later like, hey, dinosaurs, so cool.
Well, if you start now, Miles is playing, and I'm pretty sure Musty's going to start before the end of the year.
Perfect.
So you can get in on a little mini group.
So I think that wraps up our topic for today. Thank you so much, Catherine, for joining us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no problem. I had a ton of fun.
Yay. Awesome. I had a lot of fun, too.
Thank you for having me.
Do you want to tell people where they can find you on the internet and your channel and stuff?
Oh, yeah. So on Twitter, I'm just at K_song. And then also I can be reached on our Flock of Nerds, which is just at Flock of Nerds. And then our YouTube channel is just YouTube/Flock of Nerds. I think you can just find us, just Google us. We're probably the only Flock of Nerds around. So yeah, we're pretty active on Twitter. So that's the easiest place to find us. And we have forums on Cartridge Club as well. So cartridgeclub.org.
Awesome. And Riley, where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at KALERI with an underscore, and also on Twitch, but not so much lately because I've been so busy. But I am there. It's just twitch.tv/KALERI with no underscore.
And you can find me on Twitter at @Josila_ and on YouTube where my channel is called Cannot Be Tamed. And if you have any feedback or questions for us, you can reach out at mediamavenscast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at _mediamavens. With 280 characters, you can get in some good questions now. We also have a forum for discussion of our episodes on cartridgeclub.org. And if you like the show, please leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. It's been a few months since we got a review, so if you haven't done it yet, we would greatly appreciate it. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Yay.
That was a lot of fun. I wasn't lying.